We got something that's really fantastic. I don't know how you go out fantastic, fantastic.
I think this is basically how they get away with it, is that there's too many people like myself that don't even understand what was going on there. All that stuff, betting on futures, I don't even understand what any of that means. I was just in the stock market long enough to realize, like, hey, I don't know what the f*** is going on. I basically felt like I was standing at a crap table. I put my money on a crap table and I wasn't even in the casino. You know, I was in a different state, and then I was calling somebody else up going, hey, how's the game going? You know, I saw a couple of stats at the bottom of the screen and I can't even read them. I don't even know if the game's even being played. That's what I can't get past about. Everybody listening to this podcast, you don't have any of the money that you earn every week. You don't have any of it. You ever think about that? It's a number on a piece of paper. You take it to the bank, and then they stick that number in your ATM. And then occasionally you go to the ATM, and they give you a piece of paper that is only worth something because everybody says it's worth something. But you really have nothing of value. What you have is the piece of paper that's part of the lie. So that is the genius of all of this shit. Through penalties and fees and taxes and all that crap, they get you even further removed where you have to invest it. You know, why do I have to f***ing invest it? You can't, I don't know. You don't get anything. You don't get anything of f***ing value. The only thing that has value is the lie. And as long as the lie continues, I mean, isn't this the month where we go to raise the debt ceiling every f***ing year? Eventually that wave's going to crash. I don't know. I hope when the wave crashes that all races and all economic levels somehow put down their differences and they all come together and we just start walking towards gated communities. All right? There you go. How much are you stealing that you have to live behind a gated community? They're sitting there acting like they're afraid that we're going to steal their shit. It's like you got your shit by stealing from us. All right? Anarchy?
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
From National Public Radio in Washington, this is Options. Increasingly, for the past several years, the broadcast industry has come under fire for a variety of things. Probably the only clear-cut statement that can be made about the industry is that it reflects a variety of interests, goals, and abilities of the people it employs. On today's Options, we will hear from three people connected with broadcasting. First, we feature an address by Dr. Clay Whitehead, the director of the Office of Telecommunications Policy. Dr. Whitehead will be followed by an interview with Charlotte Reed, the only female commissioner for the Federal Communications Commission. We will end the show with an address by a former FCC commissioner, Nicholas Johnson. Dr. Clay T. Whitehead was born some 35 years ago in Kansas. He received his undergraduate degree at MIT in electrical engineering. He later specialized in economics and management. It was in that field that he received his doctorate. In 1968, Dr. Whitehead became a member of President-elect Nixon's Special Task Force on Budget Policy. In mid-1970, a new office called the Office of Telecommunications Policy was established. Dr. Whitehead was appointed director, and that is the post he currently holds. From the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, Dr. Clay Whitehead.
I left California some 5 years ago, the tender age of 29, to go to Washington, quote, for 2 years, unquote. 35 years old now, as was mentioned, 5 years later. And really, I think, I hope, much the wiser. These have been fascinating times. They have been interesting times. And today, I thought the most valuable thing I could do was review for you briefly what some of the things were that were going through our minds when we were making communications policy back there over the last 3 years. And perhaps, if I can, indulge a bit in some personal reflections on government and business and the press and relations among the three. In many ways, this has to be a time to rethink. It's a very sad time in Washington. It's a time when the cynic might say there's nothing else to do but think. But I think when we're going through a period of questioning about government and its ability to govern, and no matter how you feel about the short-run issues, you have to stop and think a bit. Where have we been? Where are we going? There have been two principal threads running through the relationships and the strategy of this administration in dealing with the media. One thread is reflected in some of the statements that the former vice president made. And that falls in the category, I think, of legitimate haranguing back and forth between the press and the elected officials of our country. Another aspect of that thread, though, is of much more concern. It's reflected in the memos that were circulated within the White House and from the White House to the Re-election Committee about strategy in dealing with the nation's press institutions. And I commend that for all of you to read, because it's an example of something, a kind of thinking, that ranges from foolish to impractical to unwise to perhaps illegal. It's a kind of thinking about a relationship between government and the media that has no place in the White House. It has no place in the Congress of the United States. It has no place anywhere in the government. I think we should learn that fact. But there's been another thread that's been going through this administration's relationship with the media. Talking now about radio and television regulation and policy, not the illegal, not the behind-the-scenes attempts to muscle or to induce a short-term coverage of the news that's favorable to your point of view. But talking now about the legal controls, the laws, the regulations of the Federal Communications Commission that apply to our electronic news media.
Fox Urgent. Clouds. This is some heady news business happening now. There's a box flying through the air. There's a man in a box trying to disconnect handcuffs. He does not have a key. He is racing feverishly. The G-forces are very strong. That's the coffin-looking thing there. That was it on the right, the yellow thing. And there are the handcuffs. And they're going to push guy in box that looks like coffin while handcuffed out of box.
There is no such thing as not successful.
No such thing as not successful. Well, I can actually think of a way this would not be successful. He could not get out of that handcuff and not get out of that coffin. But we will watch coffin be pushed out of plane and coffin free fall. I don't know. I I don't know. What do you think the chances are that we won't see any of this? It's just not my first skydiving rodeo, you know what I'm saying? So we'll get back there for dude jumping out of plane while handcuffed inside coffin. We will show you that live because we can. Are there emergency personnel on ground in case this goes badly? And again, the flying continues. Whoosh, whoosh, very loud. Wind going by. Whoosh. Oh, look at that. Coffin man. So man in now on parachute. He's coming. He looks like he's coming down fast, too. He's behind the trees, it's my understanding, not into them. Well, imperfect, but, you know, all in life is not perfect. And, oh, look, more parachute people.
It was a little anticlimactic, I feel.
Well, you know, I felt the same way.
We need some decent analysis of this, yes.
Yes. Man in coffin has successfully decoffinized. And I want to see the video, which we will in just a little while, because we've put you through 20 minutes of nothingness. But, I feel like we should turn to Britt Hume and Juan Williams for some expert analysis. It's been great here in Serena, Illinois. Is that how you say it?
I didn't feel any force, but what I felt was a lot of jostling.
Like sands through the hourglass. I'm McDonald Carey. These are the days of our lives. Oh, I don't know about you. My day's complete. I may just go home now, have a bowl of soup.
Republican National Committee is threatening to blackball NBC and CNN.
A bold ultimatum.
Unless the networks agree to pull the plug on several upcoming Hillary Clinton documentaries.
Cut out the love for Hillary Clinton.
They may, in fact, boycott any debates that would be held on CNN or on NBC.
You're serious about this boycott, right?
I think I'm being very reasonable here.
This is great.
Wait, what was your comeback?
What CNN's saying is, chill out for now.
How certain are you that this will be a love letter to Hillary?
Look, come on. Of course they are. Of course they are.
We haven't seen these. I don't think Michael's seen them. I haven't, and I don't think Mr. Priebus has.
Networks that are not in the business of promoting our party. They're not in the business of promoting our candidates.
Is it fair and balanced?
Is this the nuclear button? Is that the Nancy?
It's a grand conspiracy.
I agree.
Congratulations, you win our root beer float.
The reality is it doesn't matter whether it's positive, negative, in between.
What kind of sense does this make?
I don't know. I don't know.
We would encourage the members of the Republican National Committee, meaning you, to reserve judgment until they know more.
That's insanity.
No voter is going to decide to vote for or against Hillary Clinton based on some film that's shown on an entertainment channel.
RNC limiting debate participation seems to be the ultimate disservice to voters.
Sounds very smart. Reince Priebus. Good.
Well, maybe I'm the America.
you ready for a whole bunch of little nose pickers? Because they're here.
And here to help us out, the always tan George Hamilton.
Thank you.
Where is the president? He shows up on Jay Leno.
Sitting on Jay Leno's couch.
Jay Leno.
Talking about terror, lunch with Hillary, the Olympics, and Trayvon Martin.
You can go Trayvon to broccoli.
Everyone is concerned about these embassy closings.
Yeah. Jay Leno really playing the part of a reporter yesterday.
How significant is this threat?
The president using late night funny TV to talk about national security.
Late TV.
Late night television here. This is a comedy show.
I'm afraid that no one's going to be right.
The president going on Jay Leno is a joke.
Not joking around.
It was not just a series of jokes.
It's not just a comedy show.
There were some laughs, but really the conversation was driven by serious topics.
I see kind of a bromance with you and John McCain.
That's how a classic romantic comedy goes, right?
Great question from Jay Leno. Excellent question he asked there.
Who is Jay Leno?
Why Jay Leno versus David Letterman or some of the other late night show hosts?
More of a softball kind of a situation.
He's not going to get the hardball questions that he might get by sitting down with Bill O'Reilly and
sure.
the like.
Go directly to the low information voter.
Maybe a Jimmy Fallon or Conan O'Brien might be a bit too jokey.
I think Jay Leno did a great job.
The president stays on message.
It seems to me the president completely dodged the question.
There's another way of looking at this. If you lose Leno, you lose America.
News alert, President Obama has canceled his one-on-one meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin just after his appearance last night with Jay Leno. Obama will still be attending the G20, but he won't be having these one-on-one talks. A major snub to Russia, isn't it?
The president should have reached over there and punched him in the mouth. We don't need our president going over there and taking anything from this beady-eyed little thug. So what if
And a warning, the video we're about to show you is violent.
We've seen squirrels on water skis. That's old news.
That is a bear on a jet ski. But there are serious matters to discuss here. Let me move on.
Dog TV.
Eco goats.
A cat roaming around on a Roomba.
The best is yet to come.
Oh my God, the clock is ticking.
Bigger meals could actually help you lose weight.
Pretzel bacon cheeseburger.
A waffle shaped like a taco.
Chocolate can actually help sharpen your mind.
Look at that big baby.
Everybody's buzzing about Beyonce's new dude.
45-page water tasting menu.
A really big frankenfish.
Think you have to wait until you turn 65 to score senior discounts? Think again.
We put up a yogurt shop.
A bull breaks loose at a county fair. List of the best water parks in the U.S.
A big old Hollywood feud.
It's almost like you're a dolphin.
We all know yawning is contagious. That is true for dogs, too.
But a shark on the subway may just top everything.
Why are feminists still pushing the need for gender equality?
This young lady didn't seem to be having too much fun as she sat in the passenger seat at a San Diego autocross competition. Oh.
Oh! And we'll get serious for a second. Whether it was just a priest as an angel, serving as an angel, or an actual angel that came in, he was an angel.
Here's a question for you. How do you handle a hungry monkfish?
Tiger Woods, his house, is it falling into the ground?
Darn that, Brian Kilmeade.
And finally, 24 carats. That's how much gold is in new thongs. You know, once upon a time, we were a superpower. We would kick Russia's butt.
Hey, my daughter, oh, no! Oh, no!
And what do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be an anchor woman.
All right. How about that?
The world's first test tube burger has been unveiled.
It's made of the cow cells. It's beef as we know it. But we enhance the color with red beet juice and some saffron. And there is some breadcrumbs and a binder in it, and that's pretty much it.
The raw ingredients may sound unappetizing, half millimeter thick strips of pinkish yellow lab-grown tissue. But after it was fried...
There's quite some intense taste. It's close to meat. It's not that juicy. But the consistency is perfect.
Texture, the mouthfeel has a feel like meat. The, you know, what Hani was just saying, the absence is, I feel like the fat, you know, like it's a leanness to it, but the bite, you know, feels like, you know, a conventional hamburger.
it's not yet cheap or created easily. It has cost £250,000 to make and 5 years of research and production up until this day. The first tests were with mouse meat, then pork, and then beef. Professor Post reckons he can make a burger that is almost the same as one from a slaughtered animal. Those who back the idea point towards the rocketing global demand for meat, one stat being that by 2050, demand for meat will double. Backers also say this will help cut down on animal cruelty, and just a few cells from a cow can be turned into 10 tons of meat. However, those against say not enough research has been done into any possible side effects, and this is an unnatural way of providing food. While others say we should be changing our eating habits to consume less red meat anyway. All this has got plenty of publicity so far, with the burger being labelled Frankenburger at its worst. Whatever it's called in the future, it could become a choice at the supermarket. A prediction is in 10 years' time.
That was 14-year-old Rachel Parent throwing down the gauntlet to Kevin. The teen activist is passionate about genetically modified food and, as you just heard, takes issue with a lot of things Kevin has to say on the subject, including a show that we did some time ago. Rachel's an activist and the founder of Kids' Right to Know. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me here today.
I want to start with how you came to be passionate about this. What was it about GMO that actually drew you in the first place?
Well, originally I had to do a speech for my school and I really wasn't sure what to do it on. So I was researching these different topics and I realized that GMOs actually affected everything. So I decided to go with GMOs and researched it more and more, and then eventually I just got so into it protesting and got so into it I started doing speeches for other people.
Who are the other people you're doing speeches for?
I actually go to schools and I also do speeches at protests and different conferences as well.
Are your parents involved? Is it something that they supported, or was this something that you did all on your own?
I did it, but they support me completely.
Yeah. You know what a lobbyist is, right?
Yes. Somebody,
okay. Do you think you're a lobbyist for the movement that's against genetically modified foods? Would you call yourself that?
No, I don't think so. And I think that I'm just a part of that movement. And I feel like I'm, like, supporting the youth, really.
And why, when you say Kids' Right to Know, why do you feel it's important? I mean, this is obviously an issue that's a political hot button, right? It's a fight in places like Europe, keeping the foods out of places, labeling them in America. It's all over the place. Why do kids in particular, in your view, need to have an awareness of this?
For sure. I believe it's our future, after all. I mean, if you're going to do something to our food, we should definitely know about it. And we're the ones who might have to live with these consequences. So why not be informed about it?
Do you make the assumption right out of the gate that all kids your age believe that this is a bad thing to experiment with foods to make them better or worse? Is this something that you think everybody thinks is bad?
Not necessarily, but I believe that everyone has the right to know what's in their food. And that's exactly why my whole campaign's about. And that's why I just want GMO labeling, and that way people can make informed decisions about what they want to eat.
Do you worry at all about being used? Kevin sort of alluded to this. There are huge lobby groups on either side of this. The companies that make the GMO foods and grains and the rest of it definitely have powerful lobby efforts, but so do the environmentalists and others. Do you worry about being used at all in this fight?
No, because my own cause is different, I believe, because we're just the youth, and we're a complete part of it. But we're separate in a way because we're fighting not only for our food, but for our future and for our nature and our ecosystem. So I believe that we're completely different in a way, but we add to the group.
Okay, let's drill into the issue. Let's say you weren't as lucky as you are, and you were born in an Asian country, you were 14 years old. your only food was rice that had no vitamin A in it, you're going blind and then you died. 550,000 people your age die that way every year. And a company like Monsanto could come along and offer you a genetically modified rice that includes vitamin A that could save your eyesight and your life. How do you feel about that, Rachel?
Actually, funny you mention this. Golden rice was scrapped because it didn't work. And in order for the average 11-year-old boy to get enough vitamin A from rice, he'd have to eat 27 bowls of rice per day. And another thing is, the reason there's blindness isn't because there's a lack of vitamin A in the rice. It's because their diets are simply rice.
Well, that's the problem. You're saying even if he has to eat 30 bowls of rice, there's no vitamin A in what he's eating now. It's not scrapped. It's still being tested. And the bottom line is there'll be other ways to modify food to save people like that. Should we not be trying these things to help those that are dying, or are you against that too?
Should we be messing with Mother Nature?
Well, what do you say to a child your age that's going to die? What do you say?
I mean, in all reality, because golden rice didn't work, how can we fight for that?
And so you don't want to see any attempts to stop food from being destroyed by insects. I mean, what I'm trying to focus you on is there no merits to this at all from your point of view?
My point of view is just that it should be, first of all, tested a lot more. I mean, it's only tested by the very companies that stand to gain by their approval. So I really think that we should have independent studies and then mandatory GMO labeling. That's my thing. That way we can, as consumers, have informed decisions.
Well, there's two debates going on here. One, you want to see labeling. That's one thing. But are you against modifying food at all? Which one?
I know this sounds radical, but yes, I am against genetically modifying our food.
Rachel, I have a problem with that. That may be causing or basically giving a death sentence to millions of people around the world that are not as fortunate as you are.
You know that GMOs actually don't have higher yields either.
Look, the point is to stop experimentation in a science like this that has so much promise could be a huge mistake and effectively be a death sentence for those that need higher yields if they can get them, plants that are not susceptible to insects and indeed have more vitamins that they need to stay alive with.
And I'm completely, you know what, actually I'm totally fine, and that's completely somebody's decision whether they want to eat GMOs or not. I'm totally okay with that, so they can keep growing it. That's totally fine, as long as they continue to test and also give us the choice, because it's our right to know.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to let Kevin O'Leary a little bit more. Stay with us after the break. Kevin and Rachel will face off on the issue of genetically modified food. About 90% of all corn, cotton, and soy planted in the U.S. has been genetically modified. The use of these types of seeds around the world is widespread and growing. Proponents say they help farmers plant more with less and ultimately help increase yield to feed the world. Critics say people need more information about food that's been altered for health and safety reasons. Rachel Parent is a teen activist and founder of Kids Right to Know. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
I want to talk about sort of this fine distinction, and Kevin was raising this before, but is it an all or nothing question? Because we, throughout history, whether it's, you know, the breeding of animals or, you know, introducing things like hothouse tomatoes, we do change the way things are grown, and we even change their makeup, their color, their, you know, the content of them. We just do it more slowly outside of a lab. Is there some room to improve things scientifically if we safety test them, if we actually go through the same kind of FDA studies you have to do with a drug?
Well, I think a lot of people also confuse hybridization with GMOs.
Yep.
And just to clarify, GMOs, it's a genetically modified organism, and it's where they take the DNA from a species such as it can be like bacteria, virus, animal, or even from a plant, and they insert it into the DNA of another species to introduce a new trait. For instance, a common trait is pesticide producing. So they'll make the crops pesticide producing, but they haven't adequately tested, and Monsanto's longest study is 90 days. That really doesn't determine how long term it's going to affect our health, the environment, and even our entire ecosystem.
Yeah. You know, saying Monsanto's testing in 90 days is a little mislabeling it, because many other organizations, including, it sounds like, some ones you're involved in, do much more testing. So a product comes to market, many people test it, including the government. So Monsanto knows that about food.
Actually, can I just... In Health Canada nor the FDA do any independent studies, and they rely only on the very studies provided by the companies that stand to gain by their approval, like Monsanto.
There's other companies as well, right?
Yes, but they all do their own independent...
Are there organizations on the other side of this debate that do... Is there any... What would the testing look like? In other words, what kind of testing would be reliable to say this is okay for the environment or the ecosystem?
Definitely, we need a long-term study to determine if it's safe for not only our ecosystem, but our health as well.
Yeah.
But Rachel, we're in a long-term study. You're eating genetically modified food, whether you like it or not.
We're the lab rats.
And we have been for decades, and I think what I'm trying to get at about your point of view, and look, everybody has the right to have one, but to say that there's no merit to having science try and make yields better or foods better or help people's problems on dietary basis sounds a little extreme. And I'm wondering, as time passes, because I have a case study in my own home. I had a daughter your age who, at the same time, she was vehemently opposed to this. She decided to make a documentary film, and she went through the process of researching it. I'm going to show you a clip of it, and she was just like you. She doesn't feel that way today anymore.
You know, actually, Kevin, I have seen this video, and I don't necessarily agree with all the points that are made. And I do have some information that I can share with you after
about it. She went at it from both sides. She didn't make a claim at the beginning that she had a point of view. She said, I'm going to examine both sides. And I wish for you the same thing, because to stay on a point
that... Actually, I have examined both sides, but I choose to follow this side.
And you would prefer to see no more work in GMOs.
Not necessarily this, but I do believe if they're going to work, not only that they have to test it, but at least give us the right to know what's in our food.
Okay, different issue around labeling. I think everybody gets that, and I think the trend in society now is more transparency, and you're going to get labeling. Fine, okay. But I'm trying to explore whether you have any flexibility in your thinking about the merits of science and food. It doesn't sound like you do, and I find that not good, actually.
Actually, you know what? If they want to... experiment. Okay, but that brings me back to the labeling. At least give us the choice.
The truth is, though, as we know, virtually every product in the grocery store would then be labeled GMO. One danger that you'd face is we would just become immune to that label. We would accept that it's everywhere. As Kevin says, we've been exposed to it for decades, and we'd shrug and say, well, it may be killing the monarch butterflies, but, you know, I've been eating it for 10 years, so I'm not going to stop now. Are you worried about that aspect of this?
Not necessarily, because at least then they have the choice if they want to eat it. But the people like me will find the odd...
Well, we don't really. I mean, I don't have a choice to avoid GMO corn if I live in America, right? Because it is all genetically modified.
It's pretty much all...
So if I'm going to eat corn or any corn-based products or any corn flour or anything that's derived from it, I'm eating this stuff. So that's a pretty tough choice to make.
I mean, there are the odd ones that aren't, and that's why we do want labeling. That way we do know which ones are.
You know, you're very articulate. That's a positive. What I'm concerned about and what I'm exploring with you is whether you've become a shill for a group that wants to use you because you're young, you're articulate, you're getting lots of media, and I'm happy for you on that. But I'm trying to figure out whether you really deep down believe this, that you should stop all scientific approach to looking at food, even if it has long-term benefits down the road for people that really are not as lucky as we are in North America, that don't have access to all the protein we do. That can't be your position. I don't believe it.
It's not necessarily that, and this brings me again back to the labeling, because, I mean, at least test it properly, adequately. That way we know as the consumer if it's safe, and you know what, okay, whoever wants to eat it or whoever wants to experiment with it, go ahead.
But okay, Rachel, I give you the labeling. Let's say we mandate everything's labeled. Got that. Would you allow companies like Monsanto and many others to try and modify foods to the benefit of all human beings everywhere?
Are you anti-science? Yes
or no?
I'm not anti-science, but I'm for responsible science and ethical progress. Science that's proven safe by not the very same companies that stand to gain by their approval.
And I'd like to say we have no evidence, and we may want to withdraw the accusation that you're a shill. What you are is clearly a passionate 14-year-old, and... We need more of those in the world.
I've always thought that as people age, because you can have a vehement position at one time in your life, but when you start to see the evidence on the other side of it over time, you may change your minds. And from my point of view about you, I hope that happens.
Is that likely to happen, Rachel?
No.
Rutherford, New Hampshire could be any town in America. Idyllic tree-lined streets, kids riding their bikes, and every home fortified for the unavoidable collapse of society. Every home but one. 51-year-old David Peterson lives in a penetrable three-bedroom home with no security against the forces of a post-apocalypse America. And neighbors say David seemingly has no plans to construct a weaponized compound for his family. Are you worried for your community?
Oh, of course I am. Every rational person is prepping for doomsday. Environmental disasters, economic meltdowns, superviruses. Peterson's not doing anything to protect his family. It's unsafe.
After the EMP happens, my drawbridge is going to be the only thing between me and the government's horseback Gestapo. He doesn't even have a moat.
Despite common knowledge that a wrought iron gatehouse would serve as his first line of defense in the event of a government forced sterilization, the Peterson home is seemingly lined only with flimsy aluminum siding. The house is so defenseless, in fact, that neighbors have complained.
It doesn't affect just him. It affects all of us. Mm-hmm. We are only as strong as the weakest spot in our defenses.
Just how vulnerable are the Petersons?
If I could break his walls with a bat, imagine what a roaming band of hungry cannibals is going to be able to do. I mean, it's irresponsible. You know, he's got kids in there.
Residents of this traditional community agree that the best way to ensure your family's safety during the looming end of this country as we know it is a traditional medieval castle with its high stone walls and dependable weaponry. But concerned residents say it's not just Peterson's unwillingness to prepare his home that worries them.
I know for a fact he hasn't learned how to perform his own surgeries either. What happens when he gets shot with an arrow?
He's not even growing corn in his own backyard. I mean, I'm not growing corn either, but I've been training to live off my body fat for 6 weeks.
But not everyone in this town sees Peterson as an outcast.
He's not crazy. I'm not building a castle either. Nah, when the big one hits, I'm running off into the woods. This whole town's in a valley. Impossible to defend.
While the naive homeowner refused an interview, we were able to sit down with his son.
Kids at school make fun of me because my family doesn't have a trebuchet or a cauldron of hot oil on the roof. But if my dad's not going to protect us, I'll make sure me and my mom are safe. I love my dad, but realistically, he's already dead.
The undefended home sits at 5494 Concord Place for when supplies are scarce and you have no choice but to plunder his house for scrap metal and human meat.
Right now who's facing a possible year in jail for sprinting across the field during the All-Star game. They're charging him with disrupting a sporting event. Now look, the average dude who streaks across a baseball field is some beer-guzzling moron with no talent for anything, probably lives with his parents, had a girlfriend once, but she got tired of finding Fruit Loops stuck to her back after endless nights of forced spooning on a futon. So sprinting across a field, usually naked during a major sporting event, is what that guy is supposed to do. That's what morons do. That's their lot in life. Can we stop making it illegal for people to do what they're supposed to do? Why are we all acting like we're scared of the real world? Oh my God, he slowed down the game. We better put him in jail for a year or two. I was about to see a millionaire steroid-jacked hellhound fire a ball over a fence, but then that mean man got in the way of the game and delayed it for upwards of 3 minutes with his naked running. His disruption of the important sporting event. People's lives depend on this baseball game. Well, their afternoons, at least. I saw another news article that said a British soldier was being fined £1,000 for racist comments made towards a child while he was stationed in Afghanistan. Look, I'm not saying I agree with it. I don't agree with any racism, but isn't that why you sent these people over there in the first place? To be general assholes to the other people, sometimes even killing them? Isn't that their job? If you had sent them there to be nice, you wouldn't have given them a giant gun and grenades and instructions on how to pile the enemy in pyramids and basement dungeons. If you sent them there to be nice, you would have given them flowers, and scented oils. A surprising number of soldiers nowadays are even white supremacists in the U.S. military. They join the military just to be racist to other peoples. That's why they showed up. They joined to learn how to be better racists. So, you can't take that away from them now. Some people would argue that killing the Afghan people is even worse than calling them bad names. And you don't seem to find any of the soldiers for that. In fact, I would argue killing them is even more racist. In a lot of ways, the worst kind of racist. The ones who got called a bad name really got off easy in the whole scope of things. And not only do you not fine the soldiers for killing the people in the countries we send them to, you usually give them awards. And if another soldier tells the world about innocent people being gunned down, you lock that guy up for decades and call him a traitor. Plus, the soldier in question was like 19 at the time. So Great Britain, you sent a child over to another country with a giant gun and told him he might have to kill the people in that other country. Then when the child happens to start calling every dark-skinned person he sees a poo, you fine him £1,000? This is like training a teenager to be an arsonist and then putting him in the middle of a city, telling him you may need him to burn down some buildings. It's his duty to his nation to burn down some buildings in order to spread democracy. Then, when he walks around the city looking around going, "Oh, you stupid f***ing buildings. Oh, I can't wait to burn you. Look at you. You're not even modern. You're some kind of old building. Can't wait to burn you down, you loser buildings." When he does that, you flip out. You flip out. You're like, "Oh my God, he's saying bad things about the buildings? Who behaves like that?" All I'm saying is don't fine the soldiers for being racist. How about don't send them over there with guns and a vague, blatantly false mission in the first place? That would be like the least racist thing to do.
Stick shifts and safety belts, bucket seats have all got to go when we're driving in the car. It makes my baby seem so far. I need you here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. I need you to be here with me, not way over in a bucket seat.
Safety car crash test has found that half of the vehicles tested were rated marginal or poor. The test designed by the US-based Insurance Institute for Highway Safety sees a car crash into a 5-foot barrier while travelling at 40 miles per hour. The insurance group said that nearly a quarter of front-of-vehicle crashes results in serious injury or death. These types of crash tend to involve a single corner of the car, usually on the driver's side, that comes into contact with another vehicle or object. Half of the 12 small cars tested didn't meet the industry standards. The two-door and four-door models of the Honda Civic were the only small cars to earn the top rating of good in the test.
But when we're driving in my Malibu, it's easy to get right next to you. I say, "Baby, scoot over please," and then she's right there next to me. I need you here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. I need you to be here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. Far, I need my baby
waits in his Dodge Avenger by the side of the road and then speeds off. Moments after, he has ploughed through a number of people on Venice Beach in California, causing terror and injuries. The footage of the accident is distressing. The woman in the pink top is the first to be struck, while the hit and run also injures 11 other people. An Italian woman died later in hospital. She had been on her honeymoon. Footage shot moments earlier show the man arrive in his car and park up. As he watches the crowd, he appears to have a brief conversation with two people before getting out himself. Witnesses say the driver apparently tried to steer his car into a second group of people. Police say a 38-year-old man later handed himself in and has been arrested on suspicion of murder. The Venice Boardwalk is a major tourist attraction known for its mixture of shops and restaurants. But after the hit and run, a section of it became a makeshift treatment site as people came to the aid of the injured.
Well, stick shifts and safety belts, bucket seats have all got to go when we're driving in the car. It makes my baby seem so far. I need you here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. I need you to be here with me, not way over in a bucket seat.
A bus driver in China has had a lucky escape after being thrown out of a window in a terrifying crash. This shocking CCTV footage captures the moment a truck slams into the back of the bus, throwing the driver and passengers out and around the vehicle as it flips over. The truck had slammed into the back of the vehicle as the bus driver reversed down the motorway near Shanghai after missing his exit. According to reports, the driver of the truck was killed instantly and 23 people were injured.
It's done with just a few words. You could convert this to cash. Your eyes could take anyone. Things I shouldn't have told you. Live your life so whenever you lose, you're ahead. Dead are alive, sometimes more than the living. Things I shouldn't have told you. Well, the worst thing is that you don't even know my secret.
Colorado lawmakers do not have to follow traffic laws, as they are exempt from speeding and parking tickets. The special plates issued to 100 state lawmakers and representatives elected to serve Colorado are invisible to both traffic cameras and traffic tickets. Their specially issued plates do not show up in the DMV database, preventing them not only from receiving photo radar tickets, but also collection notices from the past due parking tickets. Before this story broke in Colorado News, the State Department of Public Works said it was too costly to change the system and collect the unpaid tickets. Essentially, state bureaucrats thought it was too inconvenient to change a system that was already in their own favor. That sounds a lot like the Department of Justice determining that they don't need to make a determination on Egypt. Rampant corruption for everyone!
Questions.
your cards for long. Don't ever change. Things I shouldn't have told you. Things I shouldn't have told you. Things I shouldn't have told you. Things I shouldn't have told you.
The Sun's Magnetic Field is About to Flip, presented by Science at NASA. Something big is about to happen on the Sun. According to measurements from NASA-supported observatories, the Sun's vast magnetic field is about to flip. It looks like we're no more than 3 to 4 months away from a complete field reversal, says solar physicist Todd Huxema of Stanford University. This change will have ripple effects throughout the solar system. The Sun's magnetic field changes polarity approximately every 11 years. It happens at the peak of each solar cycle, as the Sun's inner magnetic dynamo reorganizes itself. The coming reversal will mark the midpoint of solar cycle 24. Half of solar max will be behind us, with half yet to come. Huxema is the director of Stanford's Wilcox Solar Observatory, one of the few observatories in the world that monitor the Sun's polar magnetic fields. The poles are a herald of change. Just as Earth scientists watch our planet's polar regions for signs of climate change, solar physicists do the same thing for the Sun. Magnetograms at Wilcox have been tracking the Sun's polar magnetism since 1976, and they have recorded 3 grand reversals, with a fourth in the offing. Solar physicist Phil Shearer, also at Stanford, describes what happens. The Sun's polar magnetic fields weaken, go to zero, and then emerge again with the opposite polarity. This is a regular part of the solar cycle. A reversal of the Sun's magnetic field is, literally, a big event. The domain of the Sun's magnetic influence, also known as the heliosphere, extends billions of kilometers beyond Pluto. Changes to the field's polarity ripple all the way out to the Voyager probes on the doorstep of interstellar space. When solar physicists talk about solar field reversals, their conversation often centers on the current sheet. The current sheet is a sprawling surface jutting outward from the Sun's equator where the Sun's slowly rotating magnetic field induces an electrical current. The current itself is small, only 1/10 billionth of an amp per square meter. But there's a lot of it. The amperage flows through a region 10,000 kilometers thick and billions of kilometers wide. Electrically speaking, the entire heliosphere is organized around this enormous sheet. During field reversals, the current sheet becomes very wavy. Shearer likens the undulations to the seams on a baseball. As Earth orbits the Sun, we dip in and out of the current sheet. Transitions from one side to another can stir up stormy space weather around our planet. Cosmic rays are also affected. These are high-energy particles accelerated to nearly light speed by supernova explosions and other violent events in the galaxy. Cosmic rays are a danger to astronauts and space probes, and some researchers say they might affect the cloudiness and climate of Earth. The current sheet acts as a barrier to cosmic rays, deflecting them as they attempt to penetrate the inner solar system. A wavy, crinkly sheet acts as a better shield against these energetic particles from deep space. As the field reversal approaches, data from Wilcox show that the Sun's two hemispheres are oddly out of sync. The Sun's north pole has already changed sign, while the south pole is racing to catch up, says Shearer. Soon, however, both poles will be reversed, and the second half of solar max will be underway. When that happens, Huxema and Shearer will share the news with their colleagues and the public. For updates about this and other big events in the solar system, stay tuned to science.nasa.gov.
Everyone is facing changes. No one knows what's going on. And everyone is changing places. Still, the world keeps moving on. Love must always change to sorrow, and everyone must play the game, because it's here today and gone tomorrow. Still, the world goes on the same. Tomorrow, still the world goes on the same.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Since I've been calling, I haven't written a lyric. I mean, why should I when I can call upon spirits with rhythms and flows that dance like Africans who slaved on rubber plantations in the Belgian Congo, whose souls blaze more brilliant than Leopold's, and even tonight as new graves grow cold and chlorofluorocarbons warm up the globe, they live like that deep-ass John Carpenter flick. I mean, can we agree that the Orisha still permeates Santeria? Can we agree that Vordone has made itself at home in the Catholic Church? And if so, then when you see me amongst the leaves, don't think that I'm praying to the trees. I am praying through the trees, just like this poetry is now playing through me. I am a vessel, but unlike the good ship Jesus, I float in the direction in which the actual Son of Man teaches. See, death is like a prison full of souls that had to surrender. But the inmates can do things for you on the outside if you help to propagate their agenda. And tree roots, constellations, rivers, and streams, these are the evidence of things not seen. Think the Haitian Revolution was just Toussaint and Dessalines? No, no, that was the evidence of things not seen. They say superstition is the name that the ignorant give to their ignorance. And there must be a lot of superstition going around, because cash has a spiritual significance with pyramids and acacia trees and signs and symbols of deities taken from our Kibbalah libraries and now permanently stored in the Vatican. And who am I? I be your operator, patching you into the infinite. If sex was death, we would be infinite, yet never reaching a climax, counting millenniums like days, intertwining my destiny with the stars like runaway slaves. You can trace my existence through drawings on caves, yet we submit to the same God. My job's to make you conscious of your subconscious, bring you to a new transdance every time your mind gets aligned with parallel galaxies that the Pharisees could barely see. Prepare to be taken to your ultimate destiny, where your test will be to call me.
Now, go find the others. .com.
You know, I don't want to sound like a queer or nothing, but I'm really going to miss you guys when the show's over.